Today we start with chapter 1 of Exodus. You have your lessons on that, your questions. We'll be going pretty well through the chapter. Everything starts in Genesis 12. I don't know if I can bring that home enough. Everything starts in Genesis 12 with that covenant promise. Promise, I'll use the word promise of God to Abraham. And in those promises, as a review, remember land promise. That was the land that he was going to promise to them, the sons of Jacob, sons of Israel. A land promise where they can live and prosper and multiply. And then there was the great nation project promise that he gave also in Genesis chapter 12. A great nation progress that in that land they would become a great nation. Great nation where they can have a priesthood, where they can have organization, that they can direct their mind to the things that are of God, of Jehovah God. And that in that nation they can be led by prophets. They are under the protection of God himself, okay, and the provisions that he provides. So, and then also, last one, which is a promise to the Messiah, that this promise again is open to all, not just that Israel nation. And this promise here concerns us. Concerns us directly and them. Of course, this promise dealt with Jesus and from the tribe of Judah. So there's your continuation of the tribes and the offspring, 12 offspring of Jacob. Now, and within that, there's a promise within that we looked at last time just quickly, 1 Peter 2:9, that we today, all people today have access to heaven, access to Christ's blood, and that in that we can all be a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. So those are things that we need to keep in mind as we live day to day. Of course, it was on their mind, but again, that great promise is open to all of us today through the blood of Christ. And of course, at the end of all that, do we want torment or paradise? That's always the question, isn't it? Okay? There's only two choices. Remember that as we live day by day, it's also before them. Now, why the Exodus? Why the Exodus? Is it important? Is it important? You know, if there was no Exodus, they would still be in bondage and slavery. And therefore, if there was no promised land fulfillment, not necessarily be a consequence of that, if they were still in bondage. And if there's no land fulfillment, there's no great nation that occurs. And if there's no great nation, then there is no Messiah, is there? And if there's no Messiah, where is our hope? Where is our hope? So, and if I may extend that a minute, there's no Messiah, there's no salvation. If there's no salvation, why would we be here today? Why would we consider to be with one another on this first day of the week? So there's a great impact of Exodus and the great chain of events in time. So there's value in knowing about Exodus. It affects our faith and our eternity. Now, let's begin in Exodus chapter 1. The first 7 verses or so. Now these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob. They came each one with his household, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All the persons who came from the loins of Jacob were 70 in number, but Joseph was already in Egypt. Verse 6, Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. But the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly, and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. Joseph is a part of this plan for Exodus. What about Joseph? man of God. But what was he? What's the history of him? He's 11.
So
the 11 brothers. Only to Pharaoh he came second in the nation because of the interpretation of dreams. And from that point, the execution of those dreams and the storage and food for supposedly a nation that would starve, not to mention the surrounding areas. And he saved Egypt from famine. And then at the end of that, there's a reuniting with these sons of Jacob, the other 11. The 11 brothers he had that sold him into slavery. Sold him into slavery. And he reunites with them and he invites them because of the famine and to come into Egypt. So here is Jacob. Here's Jacob, Israel, the sons of Israel coming into Egypt. And that's an interesting point that there he lived there with them. They progressed there. They all die there. So that's the history of Joseph, an integral part of the story about the Exodus. And it couldn't have been done without Joseph because they had to come into Egypt, the sons of Jacob.
Now, in fact, you know, I found it really interesting that Joseph tells his brothers that, yes, you sold me into slavery and everything, but it was God working because he saved the nation. So Joseph actually had all those experiences which people would think were
great points of providence there. And you know, God was doing this all the time. It's part of the plan. God's plan is not on our timetable, but his. Go ahead. Matter of fact, he welcomed with a great tear, didn't he? Okay, when his brothers came back. And they had some thoughts too. Uh-oh, you know what's going to happen to us? All right? But they still had some problem that he may have to take some revenge on them, but not the heart of Joseph. Not the heart of Joseph. So an integral part to this. Now, God was setting all this up, wasn't he? Okay? He was making a great nation. He had a plan. He had to get them into Egypt first and establish them. Now, Joseph and his brothers and all that generation died. So some time elapsed. Okay? So we can go on that into questions. But interesting in verse 7. But the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. When they came into this land, did they go to the sandy area? Did they go to the area that had little water? Did they go to the area that was really almost uninhabitable? No. Because of the trust of the Pharaoh at that time, they went into the land of Goshen, which is up there in the Nile area, okay? The Nile Delta. A great watering area, a great level area, a great productive area in, for cattle, for livestock, for growing grain, a great area. And the Pharaoh let them reside there. And that's where they lived. A great blessing there to be there. And of course, while they were there, they multiplied greatly. Multiplied greatly. Yes? Page 10? Oh, yeah. Let me see. Yours is page 10, yes. Okay. Mine kind of moves around. Okay. All right. That's page 10. Now, before I go any farther,
The people were sent to this land of Goshen to separate the Israelites from the Egyptians because the Egyptians worshipped
we'll see that in a later verse, that the Egyptians really looked down on shepherds. Okay, if they, it was an interesting thing, because I think that's an idea with idolatry and that sort of thing in there. Okay, that they wanted to call it livestock instead of cattle. So it's an interesting point, and I'll reference that verse later on when we get to that. Good point. Good point. Now, before we go any farther, I want to go to the end of chapter 2. I don't want to miss this today, and we'll come back to it if we don't make it today. But the end of chapter 2, in verse 2:23, I think this is a major point for us to understand as we progress through the trials that this people living in Egypt are going through. 2:23. Now it came about in the course of those many days that the king of Egypt died, and the sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage. And they cried out. Cried out. That's my stress word. And their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. Verse 24. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them. What's interesting here is they finally got to a point that they're asking God. They're appealing to the one that they believe they can help them. Let's remember these many, many years, 359 years, 360 years that they were in Egypt. That they were in Egypt, that they were subjected to idol worship all around them. They came to depend on that somewhat. So it's even though they knew Jehovah God was there, and they knew the projection or prediction of the promises, okay, that were there through Abraham, and they knew history, but they still had that problem with idol worship and the dependence on those. Matter of fact, they carried some into the Exodus, okay, and beyond that. But anyway, so here's a point where they finally get to the point when we'll see the trials and problems they went through, that they're crying out to God. And it's an interesting point in these last verses. God heard, God remembered his covenant, God saw, and God took notice. But people have to understand first the condition they're in, don't they? And is that not somewhat applicable to us today? Before we make a change in our lives, where we correct our course, we have to think about where we're at, and it may be an episode that occurs. In their case, it was, okay? A lot of death and destruction and hard labor and on and on. But for us today, we can have trials that we think we can make it through by ourselves. But we need to appeal to God. Appeal to God's people, okay, for help. So you have to get to that point sometimes, all right? So I just want to make that point. Crying out is a big point where God finally heard them. So now, any ideas on that? Thoughts? Okay. Now, Exodus 1:1, we went through that, the idea of the heritage and that sort of thing. Now, in 1:8, now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we." What do you see here? What are they realizing? That they're mightier than they. The Egyptians. Huh? The king's in jeopardy. And here we are, a king in Egypt, a great power, great armies. But guess what? There's a lot of growth with these foreigners who moved into the land of Goshen. And they're in numbers and might. They're feeling threatened. In Cairo, in Egypt, and that threatens the throne. When power is threatened, what happens to power? What do? Lash out. Burdens, restrictions, even to the point of persecution. Okay, and also we can see that finally trying to exterminate them. Okay. So there's a lot of the infanticide, a lot of things happening, okay? So it's progressive sort of thing. he's beginning to see this great increase in population. And again, when you're talking 360 years in Egypt, that's a long time. But to go from 70 people, you know, to millions, you got to move on, all right? So God was instrumental in those births and death rates and all those sort of things, accidents that caused death, all those sort of things. Not to mention prospering people for food and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of growth occurring. And again, not to mean anything, but those projections of them leaving Egypt, forming this, acquiring this new land, becoming a great nation independently of Egypt, is still in everybody's mind. Okay, it's still there. Okay, because that's, again, no doubt, those promises have been passed on. Passed on. So, let's see. And then he says, verse 10, come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war, they will also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. Well, is it, what's the point now? Get a little more specific, isn't it? Okay? What's the threat now? Lose their power. But also, these so many people who are not really of us, the Egyptians, they could be that battle against us. Threaten our power. Threaten our pharaohs, kingships, family heritage, one to another. So there's that threat coming because the numbers are getting so great. Now, so they appointed 111 to deal wisely with them at first here. They appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor, and they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramius. Now, it takes time to build those cities. And brick by brick, it takes time. Storage cities. Well, storage cities, and it was in the area too where they were living. Storage for food. There's been some commentary looked at. It was storage for the bodies of the pharaohs. So I don't know about that. That's why they built the pyramids. I don't know about that. That's pure thought. Yes, yes. The labor in that. That's correct. Okay. And building cities. And it's interesting, if you, Raiders Lost Ark, I was looking, I saw Tanis just north of these cities. So if you're a fan of that, you can familiarize yourself with it. Now, and verse 12, but the more they afflicted them, the more the Egyptians afflicted them, the more they multiplied and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. Now, interesting when you say dread, okay? Terror, strong emotion. I mean, it's a thing that rocks you when it keeps you awake at night. And so that's where the Egyptians were getting themselves in that frame of mind, not to mention the king and the pharaoh. These people are becoming a super threat to them. Dread of them. So what do? 13. The Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously on top of what they were doing. And they made their lives bitter with hard labor and mortar and bricks and all kinds of labor in the field, all their labors which they rigorously imposed on them. So it's more than just bricks. It's the field work. It's the food. It's all those sort of things, day and night. You know, there's how much daylight's in a day, okay? Well, they worked more than that. So that was the idea to hold them down. I guess it caused death, caused sickness. Guess what? God keep multiplying them. Kept them healthy. Kept them becoming a great nation. God was with them. God was with them. And someone mentioned by providence, yes. Exodus 1:15, then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Sheprah and the other was named Puah. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrews' women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it's a daughter, then you shall let her live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing? And let the boys live. The midwives said to Pharaoh, verse 19, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife can get to them. So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Verse 21, because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. What about the midwives? What about the midwives? Did they help the people of God? Did they help God's plan? Yes, they did, didn't they? Yes, they did. Okay. God did not condemn them. Okay. What God did was see their faith. See their faith in action. As God saw their faith in action, he, my view, okay? God never condones lying in any case. But in this case, he had the idea of the mortality, of the morality of it. Why you kill, murder, for no reason. Okay? Well, there's no reason to murder.
And we don't know that they were actually lying.
Well, I'm going to deal with that. Could
have been dragging their feet, getting too deep.
There's a lot of things involved. No, they'd been having babies for a long time, a lot of babies, okay, to grow like they did. And God caused them to have these births, maybe quickly or not. No telling where the midwives were at that moment. Okay? So God's hand can be in all this. Well, they didn't have to make that kind of decision. Okay? And also, who knows, the midwives could have trained the husbands on how to deal with those initial times of birth. Who knows? Who knows to deal with that issue? But the point is, the midwives were rewarded by God for the goodness that they did. And it's an interesting parallels in other parts of Scripture to deal with how God deals with people who are apparently not telling the truth or some subversion. Look at Rahab. Rahab was a lady listed in Hebrews 11, okay? But her faith was to help God, okay? And why cause the murder of these spies? So there's a lot of issues involved, but it's an interesting point to research and look at. Yes, that's right. So it's a lot of things to think about when you think about these midwives. And again, these midwives, it says two of them. Well, is that just the ones that affected this group of people, or were these two midwives kind of the in charge of all the other midwives? How big was the nation? Pretty big. Pretty big. Okay? And as we go back and forth whether these were the leaders or not, or the ones who integrated with the other midwives. But the point is, God knows what's happening. He knows our hearts, doesn't he? Okay? Now, is that an excuse for us to lie in a situation where our life is threatened? No. Is a situation where we can escape from a certain torture or pain or something like that by lies, little lies? No. Okay. God is not the father of lies. He don't want you to be one of his children who lies. But we need to consider that here. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That's the whole point. That's the stress of the point with these midwives. They feared God. Now, was it fear and reverence? Was it fear and, whatever, okay? But the point is, they understood at this point that Jehovah God is in their midst. Jehovah God had been leading them in the past, even though they associated him with idolatry and that sort of thing. But God, let me give a little quote here. Let's see. I'll find it in a minute, okay? But it's an interesting thing when you have this kind of brutality going on from the head of a government, to have you let them die. And again, back to the concern. What was the concern of Egypt? Yes, they did. And why do they want the boys killed? Reproduction? No. We just saw it, didn't we? Armies. Side with another enemy. Okay? Because those who fought the battles. So they're looking ahead, but it's interesting. All right? And that's something for your further research if you like, and we can talk about it. Now, establish our households. There's interesting points on that. But the point is, God kept them. He considered them. He protected them, provisions, for this morality that they exercise with their own hands. Okay? So things to think about. Now, verse 22. Oh, let me say one quick thing, a little saying here. When you fear God, that's what these midwives are doing. When you fear God, you love life. But when you don't fear God, you devalue life. When you don't fear God, you devalue life. Whether in this time, times to come, times today, okay? These were the ultimate pro-life women here, weren't they? Okay? So it's things to think about as we go forward and think about these two women. Now, and again, we referenced Acts 5:29, obey God rather than the authorities over you, that sort of thing, or man. So keep that in mind also. All right. Now, let's see. In Exodus 1:22, he apparently saw that it wasn't working. There may be some time going by here. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people. But it was midwives before that. He still sees the threat. So there's some times went by. It wasn't working. And all his people saying, every Hebrew son who is born you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive. So he stepped it up a notch, didn't he? He really did. Okay? And this is really genocide. Trying to control it. The other didn't work, but he's seeing his power is limited. And that's where we transition here now. Let's see. And this is where, again, prejudice and turns to persecution, turns to genocide. Now, in verse 2:1, that's the first chapter. What's happened in the first chapter? They multiplied. A lot of times went by, okay? And they multiplied. They multiplied so much that the existing authorities, Egypt, the Pharaoh, the king, and all those in charge felt threatened. Threatened, okay? Threatened from internally and threatened from externally. So they took drastic measures to control that population. God's with them. God's with them. Okay? Now, chapter 2. the women conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. Okay? Who are we talking about? Moses. Now, and before that, in 2:1, it talks about what? No, a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. Went and married a daughter of Levi. What's the point? What's the point of sticking that verse in there? Levi, the word is stressed, isn't it? Right? And Levi, what comes out of Levi? Priesthood. Aaron. Aaron and his sons. High priests. Connection with God. Talking with God. Dealing with God. Okay? And again, that went on and on and on for centuries. Okay? Multi-centuries. Millenniums. So it's an interesting thing to think about here that these were Levites in that tribe. And then, I guess really reference an Aaron. Now, the women conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that it was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. What was he doing in 3 months? Was he weaned? Probably not. Weaned. Okay? But he's certainly moving around. Okay? And not just sleeping all the time like some babies do when they're very, very young. Eat and sleep. Cry. And so for 3 months, this family, this mom and dad, who had a, so this baby had an older sister, probably 10 or 11 years old, and then a brother who was 3 years difference. But here was Moses, the youngest one. Even all this going on, this family decided to have another child. Okay? Looking at the history of God's protection, looking at what's been going on in the past, they had confidence that they could have another child. All right? Now, that's an interesting point in that when you deal with families. I want to look at 11:23 really quick. Something you may have seen before. 11:23, that chapter of faith. In 11:23, it says, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child, lovely, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. These parents of faith, it says Moses, right? Faith of Moses, by faith Moses. No. By faith of parents. Parents of Moses. Moses put for the parents. They had faith and trust and confidence in those things in God, that God will be there. And whatever God's will is, God's will be. But they had faith to continue with Moses. So it's an interesting point there about the faith of these two faithful parents. Okay? And how good was Aaron? How good was Miriam? How good was Moses? Those were some good parents. No doubt some good associations they had in growing up. So there's things to consider there in the personality of them and teaching. So don't underestimate the impact that you can have on children. Whether you associate with children, whether your parents are children, grandparents are children, great-grandparents are children, okay? Adoptions, whatever it is, has a great impact on kids. And the things that you say, the things that you do. And guess what? That's the next generation in it. Okay? And as a matter of fact, you can affect the next generations after that. Look at Moses. All right?
More than being lovely in his parents' sight, Moses acts up and says that he was lovely in the sight of God. God saw, and God saw the beautiful man that he was going to use. And so God's father was protected. And I don't know if since it says by faith, I can't say for sure, but faith comes from hearing the word of God.
There's a projection forward that faith, it will be hallmark of this man. The hallmark of this man. Okay? And again, he would develop and grow in that faith this time. He has weak points. We'll see for the next 40 years, at the end of that anyway. Okay? And he makes bad decisions. Okay? But there were learning things. And we all have learning experiences, don't we? And if we survive the incident, we're okay. All right? But things to think about in life as we go through life. Be challenged. Do those things that increase your vocabulary, increase your understanding, and most of all, strengthen your faith. Strengthen your faith. Okay. Now, I just want to deal with Hebrews 11 there. Now, 2:3. Oh, see, Providence going through all this too, don't we? Okay. Exodus 2:3. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him in a wicker basket and covered it all with tar and pitch. And she put the child into it and put it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Now in Exodus 2:4, his sister stood at a distance, Miriam, to find out what would happen to him. And 2:5, the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens, walking alongside the Nile, and she saw the basket and the reeds, and her maid picked it up. 2:6. You think when they put the baby in the reeds, you think because it didn't wash down the Nile or get caught up with snakes or whatever, you think that was providence? The baby survived. Okay, I mentioned that here. What about the Pharaoh's daughter happened to be there at that time? You know, people are creatures of habit. But providence was working there. And even Pharaoh's daughter accepting the child. Because they understood really quick, didn't they? There's a crying baby, that's a Hebrew. And what was the edict by Hebrews? The boy shouldn't be around, okay? Should die. So there's a lot of providence here going on. And again, the hand of God is with Moses at this point, okay? To again be the future deliverer. Now, then Exodus 2:7. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you and the Hebrew woman that she may nurse the child?" So Miriam here, 10 or 11, says, "Hey, I know a Hebrew woman that will take care of that nursing for you." Okay, if this 3-month-old. Well, yeah, go get her. All right, here's a baby. Take her and bring her back when she's ready to come back. All right? So there's providence there that the daughter of Pharaoh accepted this offer from this child for Hebrew nursing to keep the baby alive. Okay? So, let's see. And also she paid wages. That's good extra. So the woman took the child and nursed him. 2:10. The child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she named him Moses. Why would you call his name Moses?
Drew him out of the water.
Okay? So it's a kind of a thing to remember where he came from, the origins, and also, and that was a lot of that going on, okay, in naming people. And I think sometimes naming people is pretty important when you name a child. All right, Exodus 2:11. Now, it came about in those days when Moses had grown up. Most of the time went by now. If you look at Acts 7:23, he's 40 years old at this time, that he went out into his brethren and looked on their hard labors. So, hard labors are going on. He looked at it, he made an effort to leave the palace, to leave those comforts he had. And he wanted to go out and check out my brethren. Interesting. So some teaching going on, right? By maybe his mother, occasional visits. Who knows? Maybe Miriam's visited. Who knows? Maybe whatever's happened. He's got a knowledge of the Jehovah God. Matter of fact, he had a lot of schooling. Maybe that was part of the schooling. Who knows? Okay? But the point is, he was associated with idolatry. But here he's learned to go see his brethren. So he's viewing himself as a Hebrew, isn't he? Even though he's part of the royal court. and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that, and when he saw there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. He went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the other, "Why are you striking companion?" But he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us?" Who made you over us? Who made you to rule over us? "Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" And Moses was afraid and said, "Surely the matter has become known." And then he left. Okay? Pharaoh found out after him. Now, what was Moses' problem? He probably understood from ancient writings in Hebrews the promises that there was going to be a deliverer. It was going to deliver the people from all this bondage and slavery. So how was he going about it? How was he going to go about it? Violence? Without God's instructions? Isn't that some of our base instincts some days? Violence, hitting, okay? Matter of fact, that's what the world does, didn't it, this time, okay? Egypt had been doing the violence part of it, the killing part of it, to restrain a threat. So he thought, well, I'm going to start that. Matter of fact, they'll all come to me, because they know the projection about and the promise about they can leave Egypt and there'll be a person coming that's going to lead them away. But in his immaturity, and his lack of consulting God, he resulted to the world's ways. And who eventually, Israel have a mighty army with all these people when they left Egypt? Israel didn't. God did it. God was the army of one, I guess you'd say. All right? So that's what people needed to understand in us today too. We need help, but let God's plan direct us. So appreciate it, and we'll finish this and go into the next couple of chapters next time. And then.